It's the Week in Review on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. From tax reform to a healthcare overhaul to paying respects to a grieving family, we heard about it all this week. Here to discuss is Mike Brown, Deputy Director of One Wisconsin Now. Mike, welcome to the program.
Great to be here. Thanks, Kate.
And Owen Robinson joins us. He's a columnist with the West Bend Daily News. He's a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Owen, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kate, and good morning, Mike.
Well, Governor Scott Walker will formally kick off his reelection campaign on Sunday, November 5th, at a manufacturing facility in Waukesha. He rolled out, though, an online ad on Wednesday in which he's shown jogging and riding his Harley-Davidson motorcycle. Let's take a listen.
More folks are working than ever before because we're open for business. Our budgets are balanced and we now have surpluses, so we lowered taxes. At the same time, we're investing more into schools than ever before. Test scores and graduation rates are among the best in the nation. More families can afford to send their kids to college because we froze tuition. More people have access to health care here than just about anywhere else in America.
And Walker goes on to say that there's more work to be done. So, Owen, what do you think? Is Wisconsin seeking 4 more years of Governor Walker?
Well, I guess if they like what they've been getting, then yes. And we see the great budget surplus that the state's enjoying, frozen tuition. I know One Wisconsin Now has been big on the issue of student loan debt. And I think keeping those tuition down and allowing students to be able to afford college certainly helps with that. Act 10, concealed carry, repealing prevailing wage, Foxconn, low unemployment, increasing median income. I mean, all the great things happening in Wisconsin, it's not all due to Scott Walker, but it's a lot due to Scott Walker. At the same time, there are certainly some things that that I think many of us on the conservative side would like to see. I would like to see government actually shrink, which it's never done under Scott Walker. I'd like to see the government spend less, which it's never done under Walker. So there's certainly room for improvement, but there's a lot of good stuff going. Honestly, I think his biggest threat, first I'll just say the Democratic side of the House is just a shambles right now. There's so many candidates, I don't think we have any idea who's going to be the front runner, who's actually going to be challenging Walker.
Eight right now out there at last count?
Absolutely. It's a big number. But I think the biggest problem Walker may face, frankly, is just on the national scale is a backlash against Republicans in general if Congress continues to be unable to get major legislation passed.
Okay, well, Mike Brown, the state Democratic Party responded to this ad calling it dishonest. In a statement, it said that if the video was on the level, it should show Walker's refusal to accept federal Medicaid money, to cuts to public schools, and preference to the rich over the middle class. It would also show him riding the motorcycle on a crumbling road. What do you make of this ad and the Walker campaign for a third term?
Well, you know, I did wake up a little early to prepare this morning, so I'm yawning, but it's not really because of that. It's because this is perhaps the least surprising announcement we've seen in Wisconsin politics for quite some time, that career politician Governor Walker is running for re-election. That's what he does. You know, I mean, he spent most of his adult life in what he would refer to as the government hammock, I guess. And certainly, I think he is not going to be able to either, you know, run or ride away from a record that presents some challenges to him. You know, I mean, there are a lot of issues out there where we see failures of the Walker administration that are hurting the families of Wisconsin and hurting our economy. You know, we're 50th in the nation for the third straight year in small business startups. Jobs created in 2016 lagged by nearly 70% versus the jobs created in 2015.
As
Owen mentioned, we're still in the top 10 in student loan debt in the nation, and Governor Walker refuses to embrace common sense legislation that would allow you to refinance a student loan just like you can a mortgage. So, you know, certainly there are challenges he faces, and I think it's going to be an exciting race. You know, I mean, you see a lot of candidates stepping up to run because there are a lot of people who think that they have better ideas and can offer a better, more positive vision for the state of Wisconsin.
Well, how do you feel about this field of candidates? 8 Democrats have announced their plans to run for governor.
you know, like I said, I think there are a lot of people who think the state is headed in the wrong direction, that Governor Walker has, you know, failed to provide leadership on a host of issues, and that they have better ideas and can offer a better, more positive vision for the state of Wisconsin. And they're stepping up to do that in significant numbers.
Well, Governor Walker's office announced this week that the state finished the year with a $579 million surplus, about $126 million more than expected. Governor Walker credited this extra money to what he called pro-taxpayer and pro-growth reforms. Tax collections and departmental revenues came in almost level. Senate Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling insisted the figures are misleading because the governor is pulling off road projects and underfunding schools. What do you make of this surplus?
Well, I think Schilling's comments are interesting. That's called managing a budget. And anytime you set a budget, as you go through that budget year, you make decisions along the way that we're going to, you know, something costs more than you thought it would, something costs less than you thought it would, and you move money around, and that just happens. That's called actively managing a budget. But to that end, I think it's great that Wisconsin once again has a large budget surplus. The question is, I think, what do you do with it at this point? Now, as you know, Keep in mind what that means. That means that the government collected $579 million from Wisconsinites that it didn't need. So in my opinion, give it back. Give it back to us. I think it'd be great to have a great tax refund for all of us to be able to spend on our own initiatives. But I think it also brings into relief. Remember the big debate we were having during this most recent budget debate regarding the transportation budget, and there was a alleged $1 billion shortfall, and we had all this money, and we're going to borrow, we're going to raise taxes and all of that. $579 million goes a long way to filling that alleged gap. Seems to me the budget's doing just great, which once again just underpins Walker has a great argument to make for his reelection.
And Mike Brown, I was kind of laughing a little bit, but Senate Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling, she said this quote here, "I'd have a surplus in my household, too, if I chose not to pay child care or for my son's braces." What was Jennifer Schilling getting at here?
Well, you know, I think she makes a great point there, and it is certainly true that you know, we have a serious issue with road funding, for example, in the state of Wisconsin. And, you know, we have seen Governor Walker in the lead up to his reelection bid really pull back from rolling up his sleeves and working to do something about a transportation funding crisis we have. I think it's also important to keep a little perspective here on this whole idea of a surplus. You know, basically the state of Wisconsin was expecting to have more money in its coffers than it spent after the first year of the budget. We're about a little over $100 million ahead of that projection, which if you put it in the context of a $73 billion state budget means that's operating the state government for about 2.5 days is how we've exceeded projections. And having this, you know, alleged surplus is important because in the second year of the budget, you know, the governor has signed a plan that spends more than it takes in, so that money is going to get spent down as this 2-year budget cycle continues. So I think it's important to keep a little bit of perspective here, both in that, you know, this isn't really any kind of significant surplus showing any kind of wonderful fiscal management, and I think it also highlights the fact that there are some critical services that the people of the state of Wisconsin depend on, schools and roads, that are not being funded appropriately.
We're here in Week in Review. We've got Mike Brown with us, Deputy Director of One Wisconsin Now. Also, Owen Robinson is with us. He's a columnist with the West Bend Daily News. He's a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. You can join into this discussion at 800-642-1234. Which political story from the news this week do you want to discuss? What do you make of the story of President Trump and grieving military families? Should Wisconsin drop America's Dairyland from its license plates? A range of discussion points this week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Post on the Week in Review over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So don't be surprised if federal tax reform is pushed into 2018. President Trump and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell held a news conference on Monday and said they'd love to cross it off the list for 2017, but that these big ticket items, they don't come quickly.
The goal is to get it done this calendar year. But it is important to remember that Obama signed Obamacare in March of year two. Obama signed Dodd-Frank in July of year two. We're going to get this job done, and the goal is to get it done by the end of the year.
But House Speaker Paul Ryan said in Madison this week that he's bullish on getting it done this year. He even warned last week that he'd keep lawmakers in session through Christmas to achieve the goal. Owen, what do you think about tax reform here? Is it going to happen?
Well, you know, they took a big step last night with the Senate passing the budget, which really it's a framework of a budget that allows them to move the process into a reconciliation process, which gets them around the filibuster rule in the Senate. So it's really more of a procedural thing. I'm not sure getting into the details of what they actually passed in the budget really matters at this point until they get through reconciliation. But the point being is that we all know that the Senate is going to be the big roadblock of that, because we have two or three or four, depending on the day, Republican senators who are recalcitrant and don't like to vote with their peers on a lot of these things. And then, of course, the Democrats are voting in lockstep against anything the Republicans want to do. So you go into any debate here assuming you have zero Democratic votes, because they've shown an unwillingness to move on anything at all. So you move into the reconciliation process. I think there's a chance. I guess I'm a little bit more hopeful than I was at this time yesterday after the Senate moved. Still very, very cautious about it. I think that it's something important that they need to get done. And Congress has just shown an inability to get big stuff done. And after massive failure with repealing Obamacare, I think this is kind of a – they have to get this done, or I'd be surprised if they can retain their majority in the Congress next year.
Mike Brown, gridlock, tax reform. Do we even know really what this reform is all about? What's the details of this tax reform?
You know, you're right there that the details are yet to be filled in, although the outlines that we have seen suggest that, you know, it would be best if this tax plan slipped into, never happening, based on the way it just completely tilts the scales more in favor of corporations, the wealthy, at the expense of the middle class. You know, I mean, from what we've seen so far, if you're looking at the state of Wisconsin, you know, you're seeing potentially 60%+ of the benefits of this tax plan going to the top 1% of taxpayers. You know, you're looking at if you're making somewhere north of $1.7 million, you're going to get over $75,000 worth of tax savings, which is roughly about 4% of your income. If you're a middle class taxpayer, you're going to get maybe a couple hundred dollars, which is going to be somewhere in the range of about 0.5% of your income. And you're going to lose things like the ability to deduct your property taxes and your state income taxes from your federal tax liability. So it's an appalling giveaway. And I think we would all be better off if saner heads prevail and this kind of trickle-down economic tax policy that has never worked is never passed.
Let's bring in Jim from Janesville. Go ahead, Jim.
Yes, this tax reform bill, it's a big giveaway to the richest, and it's going to hurt the middle class. And also, the Wisconsin plate, I think we should keep America's Dairyland on our plate.
Jim, why do you think this is going to hurt the middle class? A little more there.
Well, like the guy on just before, he said it takes away our deductions from our real estate tax and income. And, reducing the tax on the corporation is a big giveaway to the richest people.
Well, let's get Owen to weigh in on that. That, you know, middle class Americans are really concerned about what's going on here, Owen.
Well, we don't have a lot of details about this plan. We have a framework, and there's a lot of details that need to be filled in. But the framework is exactly what Americans have been saying we wanted all along, which is a simpler, fairer tax code. So in the framework that's been released, they would shrink the number of tax brackets to just three. So we'd have fewer tax brackets to deal with. And essentially what it does is lower taxes overall for almost every bracket, but then at the same time take away a lot of the deductions to make it a much simpler tax code. It leaves a couple of the big ones in place, child tax credit, a couple of those, but other than that, it takes them away. So yeah, if you like to take a lot of deductions on your taxes, then it's, you know, it's not something that you're probably going to like a lot, but it's something that a lot of us want, where we can have a simple income tax plan that's fair. As for benefiting the rich versus the poor, this is a tried and true and very old talking point from the left. The fact is, we already have a very progressive income tax code in America. Any tax cuts you go are always going to benefit people who make more income because they pay most of the taxes. Right now, you have the top 10% of income earners pay 47% of the entire income tax for the federal income tax. You can't cut taxes without them necessarily benefiting. It's not a moral problem. It's a math problem. Unless you want to say that we're going to have a truly fair tax code that taxes everybody at the exact same rate, then any time you tax cuts is going to lean that way. But overall, again, I think this is what Americans have been asking for forever. But whenever you're going to take away deductions, somebody's ox is going to get gored. And that means that there's some lobbyist up there, there's some lawyer, there's some special interest group who benefits from that tax deduction who's going to fight like heck to keep it there.
It's the Week in Review on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have two guests from different political perspectives. Mike Brown stays with us. He's deputy director of One Wisconsin Now. And Owen Robinson is here. He's a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Let's get your thoughts now on the week's developments at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the bipartisan approach that emerged this week to stabilizing health insurance markets? Is it possible? Join in at 800-642-1234. What do you make of the story of President Trump and grieving military families? How about Senator John McCain? Didn't mince words in his speech this week in receiving the Liberty Medal. How do you think the president's America's First mission is going? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Here we are on the 20th of October already. It's Week in Review. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What stories stood out to you this week? 800-642-1234. What do you think of the way presidents pay respect to fallen soldiers? Should the nation be having this discussion over empathy? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Owen Robinson stays with us. He's a columnist with the West Bend Daily News, a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. And Mike Brown is here. He's deputy director of One Wisconsin Now. Let's see what you make here. This bipartisan group of senators, 12 Republicans, 12 Democrats, including Wisconsin's Tammy Baldwin, they've formally proposed their compromise for steadying health insurance markets. Their bill would restore federal subsidies to insurers that President Trump blocked and make it easier for states to get out of certain coverage requirements of Obamacare. But the president, who initially spoke favorably about the deal, later came out against it, calling it a bailout for insurance companies. And Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is cool to the plan. Owen, what do you think?
Well, first off, Kate, I'm going to back up just a minute to what the discussion before the break there. I misspoke. And the top 10% of income earners actually pay 70% of the overall income taxes, not 47%. So it's actually worse than I'd said. But anyway, on
thank you for clarifying that. We really appreciate it.
Want to make sure the facts are right. So,
yes.
On this issue, you have to back up a little bit into how Obamacare was crafted. When Obamacare was written, there were two main subsidies put in place. One went to individuals, so lower and middle income families were giving a subsidy on their tax returns in order to pay for insurance for health insurance premiums if they couldn't afford it. The second one was It required the health insurers to bring down the cost of those premiums with the understanding that then the federal government would subsidize those insurance companies on the back end to make up for their losses. However, Congress never actually appropriated money to pay those subsidies. So what Trump did was actually follow the law. He followed the Obamacare law and said, rather than illegally appropriate money to, or rather give money to insurance companies to help their losses and prop up their profits, that was never appropriated by Congress, I'm not going to do that anymore. So when I look at this compromise, that's really what it looks like is it's, well, I'll put compromise in quotes, but what it really looks like is it's an effort to go back to those insurance companies and continue to give them taxpayer dollars to prop up their profits and cover their losses. I thought that that's not what we wanted to do. I didn't think we wanted tax dollars going to prop up the profits of insurance companies, but that appears to be what these senators are trying to do.
All right. Well, Mike Brown, are you concerned about this, how we go about stabilizing health insurance markets? This is a bipartisan approach coming out here. Are hopeful?
Well, you know, I mean, it is clear what is going on here. You know, I mean, we have a serious situation because Republicans simply can't get their act together, and you know, do what they have been promising to do for 7 years and have taken hundreds of votes in the House on. You know,
great.
Donald Trump has been attempting to undermine health care from the moment he took office, and he has succeeded in creating a serious problem that, you know, there is a bipartisan group of United States senators that is trying to actually help bail him out on. And he, and it seems also the Senate leader and apparently some members of the U.S. House are unwilling to seem unwilling to take the help. And it is a dangerous situation they are putting themselves in. You know, the Republicans need to be real careful here after their massive, spectacular failure this summer. You know, they own the health care issue and they own the health care failure. And by continuing to block something like this, they are going to, you know, they're going to be hurting real people who need health insurance. And you know, I mean, if you want to talk about giveaways to insurance companies, let's just take just one nugget of what was in the Republicans' health care plan, and that was continuing to allow insurance companies to deduct the salaries of their CEOs from their income tax liability, which would have put, you know, $77 million in their pockets for paying health insurance executives millions of dollars.
Well, let's get Marty in Janesville to weigh in. Go ahead, Marty.
Good morning. It's my understanding that Obamacare was set up under the premise that you would get a lot of young people, healthy people, to sign up and contribute to contribute their dollars to the healthcare system. In the event that that did not occur, he had set up a fund on the side to cover this in the event that there was a shortfall. And it's my understanding that when the Republicans got in office, they quashed this fund, which would have helped Obamacare succeed. What would your guests say about that?
Yeah, let's start with Owen. Owen, go ahead.
Well, Marty, thanks for the call. Your understanding is incorrect. So when Congress wrote the Obamacare law, as I said, there was no fund created to cover those losses. In fact, that was an illegal move by Obama in 2014 that one federal court had already ruled illegal to essentially give money to these insurance companies that was never appropriated by Congress. I know we live in the world of the big executive mansion now, but Congress still has to appropriate money in order to the federal government to spend it. They never did, and yet Obama did anyway. Trump stopped that. But let's talk about the crisis that we're talking about here. The crisis is that the structure of Obamacare is so flawed that insurance companies can't make money doing it. So and without the federal government covering their losses. So now that Trump is not going to cover their losses, those insurance companies have two choices. They can either jack up premiums to the point where they can make some money, or they're going to pull out of the exchanges, which is what many of them are already doing. The problem here, or the crisis, is that Obamacare structurally does not work. The math does not work.
Let's get Angela in Partyville to come in. Angela, go ahead.
Hi, I wanted to talk to the point of you said 10% of income taxpayers pay 70% of income tax, which tells me that they make a lot more money. I think the more transparent numbers to look at would be what percent of their income are they paying income tax on.
Mike Brown, go ahead.
Yeah, two things. First, let me just go back to Marty and say I think he is absolutely correct on both points. One, insurance is about risk sharing. I mean, that's what the basis of it is. You pool people together and you share the risk. And when people are healthy, they're not using insurance. But when they get sick, they do use their insurance. And also that, you know, absolutely the Republicans have sought to, you know, do whatever they can to undermine the functioning of the Affordable Care Act. But certainly to the point on tax fairness here, you know, we see with this framework of a Republican tax plan that a significantly larger percentage of the tax benefits go to the wealthiest, and that those benefits that they receive represent a significantly larger percent of their income than any potential benefit a middle class taxpayer would receive under what we know so far about the plan.
Well, thank you, Angela, for calling in on that. And let's move on to this firestorm that broke out this week over President Trump and grieving families of fallen soldiers. The president was asked why he hadn't commented on the deaths of four service members in an attack in Niger earlier this month. He said past presidents, including President Obama, didn't make calls to families, a claim previous administrations rejected, by the way. And in another story, this Democratic Congresswoman, Frederica Wilson, said Trump, in a phone call, told the widow of a slain soldier that, quote, he must have known what he signed up for, a story that the president said was totally fabricated. Owen, can you jump in here? What are your thoughts on this development this week and how we treat fallen soldiers?
Well, I think first off, we have to acknowledge that we're commenting on an exceedingly tragic situation, and that none of us have the text or the tone of what was actually said during that phone call. What we're reacting to is that a political opportunist, a Democratic a congresswoman, chose to listen in on that call and then go to the press and go out into the media and try to make a political point about it, to attack Trump. It's disgusting behavior that I would hope, and I think General Kelly in his press conference nailed it right, in that those calls, when they happen, should be sacred. They are. This is someone who gave their life in defense of our nation. This was the call from the President of the United States to a grieving young widow. And to use that for political opportunism is absolutely disgusting behavior. You know, to the call itself, you know, not all presidents make calls. Sometimes they do. I don't think that there's any fault on Obama there when he didn't or didn't. It's not customary for the president to make the calls. In this case, President Trump decided he wanted to, and he called the widows of those four soldiers to speak to them, or the families of the four soldiers to speak to them. And I think what he was trying to say, and again, I highly encourage you to go look at General Kelly's press conference, watch it in its entirety, and he really lays it out well, and that the message Trump, and we know Trump can be very inarticulate when he's trying to express things, but the message he was trying to say is that this soldier, he volunteered. He was where he wanted to be, among fellow heroes, and he died with honor and with respect. And Trump was trying to give comfort. I have no doubt it was in a ham-handed fashion. But the fact that he made the call, that he was reaching out, why would he call to offend the widow? Of course not. He was calling to try to give comfort. And if he did it in a ham-handed way, so sorry. But frankly, we should not know about this. That should have been a private call that we shouldn't even be talking about today.
Let's bring in Kathy in West Bend on this. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning. I think this entire subject about who said what to whom is totally a distraction from an original point. There were four service members killed. Why were they there? What were the circumstances that allowed them to be targeted by this group? Who found whom? Who got them out, etc.? those answers have never been given to the American public. And while I can empathize with the hurt feelings on both sides regarding calls, the entire subject, that particular aspect, is a distraction from a very much more important issue. Thank you.
Mike Brown, let's get you able to jump in here. Kathy is concerned about what was the mission here in Niger? Why weren't we apprised of it? And also that, you know, this is a sad time and that we should honor these soldiers.
You know, Kathy makes some great points there. And I think it is sad what has transpired here. You know, I mean, it is once again with Donald Trump. It seems that everything devolves into some sort of Twitter fight, and he is just simply incapable of conducting himself in a manner that you would hope someone that holds that office would. And it really does distract from what is a tragic situation, and from, you know, the stories of these service members and the their lives and accomplishments, and from you know, honoring their service.
Well, Kathy, thanks so much for calling in. Let's go to Artis in Delafield on this topic. Artis, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, to say that this congresswoman used it as a political opportunity. You know, she's no different than the rest of us that are home disgusted, listening to this, feeling for, you know, people that are hurting. And, you know, you can say that Trump is ham-handed, doesn't have experience, and means well, but he really said this. But you know what? He shouldn't be in that position. And I'm sorry, you know, I can't excuse. We need to have someone in there who knows how to deal with these situations. It's really disgusting.
Owen, has this conversation spiraled out of control for the Trump administration?
Well, I think I've heard Mike and a couple others comment on, you know, it's a Twitter fight and it's a controversy and a distraction. Remember who started this? It was Representative Frederica Wilson who went on Twitter to slam Trump for his treatment in this call. She's the one who started this fight and started bringing it up as a Democratic congresswoman trying to make a name for herself. And even yesterday, she was talking about how the whole thing has made her a rock star. So she's bragging about the fact that this controversy has raised her political profile and made her a rock star on the bodies of dead servicemen. She's a disgusting representative who should not be in Congress.
Well, we need to move on from this topic. President Trump is issuing a warning to Arizona Senator John McCain after McCain questioned the White House's America First doctrine during a speech in Philadelphia on Monday as he, McCain, received the Liberty Medal. Let's hear a bit of what McCain had to say.
To refuse the obligations of international leadership and our duty to remain the last best hope of Earth, for the sake of some half-baked, spurious nationalism cooked up by people who would rather find scapegoats than solve problems, is as unpatriotic as an attachment to any other tired dogma of the past that Americans consigned to the ash heap of history.
And then here's how the president responded during a radio interview the next day. Let's take a listen.
People have to be careful because at some point I fight back.
Yeah.
You know, I'm being very nice. I'm being very, very nice. But at some point I fight back and it won't be pretty.
All right. Well, Mike Brown, I'll let you go first here. What do you make of this exchange between McCain and President Trump's response to McCain's speech?
I would say in response to Donald Trump's comments, it already isn't pretty. You know, This is a United States senator raising serious concerns about our place in the world and the conduct of our foreign policy, you know, and it's met with, you know, petty threats and typical Trump bluster, you know, and it is unfortunate, and it is another instance of where with Trump you're just not able to have a reasonable adult discussion of the issues.
Let's get Owen here to respond. McCain, you know, what is this rift here that you see, Owen, between Senator McCain and President Trump? Is it growing? Is the divide growing?
Well, President McCain has had a rift with almost the entire Republican Party for quite some time
Senator.
Now.
Senator, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
But he, you know, and I think it's, you know, McCain has some great points, and he's, you know, obviously a war hero and has served our nation and all of these things. At the same time, you know, he's in his job in the Senate, he hasn't. You know, he's really been just a thorn in everybody's side. He seems to take pleasure in going against the grain. And even most recently, for him to talk about people looking for scapegoats instead of solutions, bearing in mind this is the same McCain who voted against the Obamacare repeal on the fig leaf of it didn't go through the right process. So unwilling to go to take the big step to actually do reform, to actually do something, he'd rather politic, he'd rather grandstand. And if you followed McCain's career in the Senate, this is what he does. He likes to stand on the sidelines and throw rocks at power because it raises his profile, and he likes it. And Trump, of course, Trump is Trump. He's going to respond. He doesn't suffer insults very well, as we've come to learn, and he is going to fight back. So, you know, this is, again, it's infighting in the Republican Party between two different factions fighting with each other.
It's the Week in Review with Owen Robinson. He's a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. And we have Mike Brown with us, who is Deputy Director of Wisconsin Now. You can join this conversation as well at 800-642-1234. We're going to be moving on to topics regarding the U.S. Senate race. What is America's Dairyland doing on the Wisconsin license plate? Is it time for a change? Let's discuss. 800-642-1234. We'll also take a look at the proposal to ban UW employees from performing abortion. Taking a look at that legislation. 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll be back after this break. It's the morning show's roundtable discussion on the week's developments. How do they sit with you? 800-642-1234. Our Week in Review guests from different political perspectives are with us. Mike Brown is Deputy Director of One Wisconsin Now, and Owen Robinson is here. He's a columnist with the West Bend Daily News. He's a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. We're discussing the week's events, what rose to the top in our minds, and what was turning heads this week. Let's turn to, we're going to take a look here. House Speaker Paul Ryan has largely avoided public criticisms of President Trump, but he hit the president with some zingers during a comedic address at a New York charity dinner last night. And we have, I believe, part of his speech. Let's take a listen.
And when you read the papers tomorrow, everyone's going to report this thing differently. Breitbart's going to lead with, Ryan slams the president amongst liberal elites. New York Times is going to report, Ryan defends the president in a state Hillary won. And the president will tweet, 300,000 at Al Smith dinner cheer mention of my name.
All right, Owen. Ryan making some jokes. What do you make of Speaker Ryan making these types of remarks?
Well, it looks like he was at a roast, and that's what you do at a roast. You joke about people. So I thought that was kind of funny, as political humor goes.
Mike Brown, what do you make of that that fresh commentary there from Speaker Ryan?
You know, sometimes the best comedy has roots in the truth, and I imagine that is probably not far from how Donald Trump may have reacted to that. You know, it would be nice if the speaker would perhaps take some of his criticism off of the comedy circuit and actually put it into practice when he thinks Donald Trump oversteps the bounds. But I guess we'll save that for another day.
Yeah, Saturday night, take note. Saturday Night Live, take note, right? Well, let's shift gears here to Wisconsin's U.S. Senate race. A conservative Tea Party group called Freedom Works for America, they're endorsing Republican Kevin Nicholson over his primary challenger, State Senator Leah Vukmir, because he supports removing Mitch McConnell as Senate Majority Leader. And also this week, a PAC with ties to former White House chief strategist Steve Bannon threw its support behind Nicholson for the same reason. However, Lukemire contends Bannon didn't ask her during a recent meeting if she would support removing McConnell. Owen, can you unpack this for us? What's going on?
Well, it's actually shaping up to be a really interesting U.S. Senate primary on the Republican side of the House. What you have are two different, we'll call them factions of the Republican Party. On the one hand, you have Leah Vukmir, state senator, former state assemblywoman. She's been in politics, came from being a nurse in the private sector for 20 years and then moved into government. And she's really been at the forefront of much of the conservative agenda that's been going forward in Wisconsin, everything from Act 10 to tuition freezes to repealing prevailing wage, concealed carry, Castle Doctrine. I mean, and all the list of things that have been accomplished in Wisconsin in the last 6-7 years, Vukmir's really been right there at the lead. On the other hand, you have Kevin Nicholson, who also comes from the private sector, ex-military, coming in, and his big problem is that he was a Democrat, a big Democrat, active Democrat, up until he wasn't. And now he's running for the Republican Republican side of the ballot for a Senate office. So he has no track record, no background. But what you see is he's bringing in a lot of these national players. So you're getting the D.C. crowd and the anti-Republican establishment crowd coming in with that kind of cookie cutter campaign we've seen around the country with really a lot of the same rhetoric. Reminds me a lot of Paul Nehlen's campaign against Paul Ryan, where you have somebody with no track record in Republican politics flying in and saying, you know, I'm going to be the standard bearer and I'm a true conservative, you know, don't look in the background kind of thing. So it's really shaping up to a proven Republican conservative, granted Wisconsin established Republican, running against somebody who has no background but's going to have a lot of high-flying money and press.
Yeah, and Mike Brown, what do you make of the PACs lining up in the background here behind these candidates?
Well, I think this is going to be this is shaping up to be an extraordinarily nasty and divisive race over on the Republican side. Mm. I think you see that these two candidates it appears that they're going to get swept up as proxies for this Republican Republican war amongst themselves. They have competing billionaires lining up behind them. They have competing PACs lining up behind them. And I think they're just really going to get the negative ads are really going to fly, because I think both of them have some serious vulnerabilities. As Owen pointed out, Kevin Nicholson has some pretty significant trust issues in that he is not trusted. And he has some pretty big money that's going to be behind him that is presumably going to both try and buy enough ads to paper over that and presumably try and tear down Senator Vukmir. And for her part, she also has a long record in state service that I'm sure will be used against her. She's already thrown some elbows in suggesting that perhaps Kevin Nicholson should aim for lower office before he fancies himself U.S. Senate material. And she is also clearly going to use her position as a state legislator to try and leverage leverage some advantages in her Senate run. I mean, she is she's using her committee to publicize the bills that she's introduced. And I mean, for example, she's got the chair of the board of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation out hustling for money for her. So, I think this is going to be a competitive, high-spending, and extremely nasty race over on the Republican side.
And Senate, she is Senate Health Committee chairwoman, and who has thrown her support behind this proposal to ban UW employees from performing abortions or providing training at facilities where abortions are performed, except for hospitals. At stake here is an arrangement between Planned Parenthood and the UW, which faculty members work part-time at the organization's Madison Clinic. Owen, what do you make of this proposal? We've got the lawmakers lining up on both sides. Opponents of the plan say it could destroy the school's OBGYN residency training program.
Well, and I don't know that that's the case, and I don't know. It does appear there's exaggeration happening there. It's hard to see how banning money or a relationship for one type of OBGYN procedure destroys an entire accreditation program. But I'm not an expert there. I don't know. But I think fundamentally here you have an issue where those of us who think that abortion is killing people don't want to see our tax dollars being used for that, even if the courts have deemed it legal.
Mike Brown, before we move on, do you see this as an overreach by lawmakers to meddle in what the UW is trying to do and teach these OBGYNs?
I think absolutely. I mean, this is a long pattern of legislators feeling empowered to make healthcare decisions for other people and to step in where they have no business. I mean, it is important that the University of Wisconsin be able to train OBGYNs in all of the procedures that they may need to use in order to provide people with the comprehensive healthcare which they deserve.
Well, as we wrap up here, the head of the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce said this week that maybe it's time to do away with America's Dairyland on state license plates. Kurt Bauer floated this idea at a luncheon on Monday, saying Wisconsin's economy is more than just agriculture. And he talked about the diversity with us here on the air on Wednesday morning.
It's not just manufacturing, it's not just agriculture. We have high tech, we have biotech, we have education, we have healthcare. You name it, Wisconsin has those types of opportunities. We also have an unmatched quality of life. We've got great communities. I often will say that we've got the best small and medium-sized towns that nobody outside of the state has ever heard of.
All right, Owen, is it time to make a change on Wisconsin's license plate, its slogan?
Well, it's really a proxy over the identity of Wisconsin. How do we want the rest of the country to perceive us? And as they read our license plates as we're traveling around the nation, my personal favorite of states is Live Free or Die from New Hampshire. But if I were to choose a new one for Wisconsin, I would go with Act 10 Worked.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, Mike Brown, you better have one in your back pocket, my friend. What do you say to this?
Well, you know, I mean, I think in a certain regard, you know, I mean, this is just the hubris of WMC. You know, I mean, I'm sure they would like to, you know, they would love to write our license plate slogan, you know, we own this state. You know, I think it's perhaps an interesting discussion to have. It is certainly a distraction from some of the weightier issues of the day, and I think it's something everybody can have a little bit of fun with.
Well, yeah, and Darren called in to ask, why are we wasting time and money and effort on something like this? Mike Brown, why is this discussion even here?
You know, I mean, I think it's one of those things that, you know, Wisconsinites certainly have a pride in their state. And we value our traditions and our identity. You know, America's Dairyland is certainly an important part of our state's history. And I think anytime you know you kind of you poke that bear, we get a reaction and we get a vigorous public discussion.
Well, we'll have to leave it there for the discussion. Thank you both for joining us. Mike Brown is Deputy Director of One Wisconsin Now, and Owen Robinson is a columnist with the West Bend Daily News. He's a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. This hour of the morning show was produced by Bill Martins and Brianne Chasso. Michelle Johnson is executive producer, and we had technical direction from Michelle Good. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for listening to The Morning Show. Have a great weekend and meet you back right here on Monday. Take care.